I mean, Bianca told us this morning that there are many problems that you have to face if you want to apply tensor networks to something more complicated than the easing model, and that's what we are going to do today. You should have gotten the emails with the slides and with several Julia files containing the tensor network renormalization code for the models. You have received those? Okay. So the point today is just that there are several different things you can try to do today. So one thing is just what I would you like to see is a rather naively written code. You try that one and see that, okay, if your symmetry group is rather small and you work with this, it works reasonably fast. But as soon as you go to larger groups, it gets very slow. And you can speed this up by exploiting the symmetries that the models have. So what I and this is precisely the point of tensor networks, is that if you have more variables, all your operations take longer. Your singular value decomposition takes longer, and your summation of variables takes longer. And Bianca told about basically these three things that you have to do. If you have a non-abelian group, you have to take sort of care of the magnetic indices. That's already done, basically. The second improvement, which I would like, which you can try today, is how you would implement this, is only compute and sum over those parts which are actually non-vanishing. And I've given you sort of the three-valent algorithm in contrast to the four-valent algorithm that you programmed yourself on Tuesday. And so today is just about what we call the SE2K cross SE2K Barrett-Crane intertwiner and SpinNet models. And it's non-technical. You don't have to understand what these variables exactly are. You can read this article, but it's not important for today. So what I can do is just briefly explain to you what is going on. So up there, you see again what you've coded on Tuesday, the tensor renormalization group approach by Levin and Knave. And what the object is that we have here is essentially you have a tensor, and each of these indices carries two spins, J plus and J minus, and so-called two magnetic indices. And you can already see you have a quantum group, which is a bit of a misleading name because it's neither a group nor quantum. But it comes with a nice feature. So it gives your maximal spin cutoff. So you have the level k, your maximum spin is k half. And then you additionally, it's like you have two of those on each of your edges of a tensor, which you have to store and eventually to sum over. And additionally, you have also these magnetic indices. So 2j plus 1 indices on those as well. And you can try to save that on your computer. Good luck with that. And I don't know how long you would like to wait. So this is basically completely hopeless if you want to go do anything which is a bit larger. So that is essentially what Bianca explained to us this morning, that these tensors actually carry a huge symmetry. So essentially, you have to take care of those coupling rules because they are essentially invariant tensors. So you can expand them into a basis, namely a three-valent basis that you would adapt to the splitting that you intend to do in your tensor network renormalization. And thus, it is actually possible that you can sort of dissect, or you define a different basis and completely detach your algorithm from those magnetic indices. So this is basically taken care of, and it's a massive improvement because you go from over here, where you have those spins and magnetic indices, to something which just depends on like two more spins, which is what we sometimes call a block or an intertwiner channel, and just the representations on the edges. So it's already a huge improvement. And the other thing that you need to do is the so-called triangular algorithm. So, and this is the codes that you find that I've sent to you is a triangular algorithm, for example, for this kind of variables. So, and as Bianca described to us this morning, if you do the splitting of those four-valent tensors, you just do a slight deviation and do not go back to another four-valent tensor, but you stick to three-valent tensors. And instead of having then a tensor which depends on essentially five representations, you just have three representations. So And this is actually indispensable for an even more complicated model, but more on that later. So who of you have taken a look at the code that I sent you around? So it would be this file, intertwiner no super indices in iJulia. So what I can do now is essentially give you a quick tour through what this program does in its various steps. So besides this huge part at the top, which just set up the quantum group, but who would like to have a quick guide through the tour, or would you like to discover that yourself, what it essentially does?
Yes,
I think so. Just triangular. Sorry, it's yeah. But yeah, so by emails. It was sent by emails this morning to all participants. So Stephanie sent them around.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
So this here, for example, is just. So I haven't used the ncon package that you've been using, so it's all explicit in the code. But this is just the main loop of our tensor network renormalization. So the first function computes your initial tensor as a function of one parameter alpha. And you will try to see what happens for different alphas. And then you start essentially your iterations. You define here a new tensor. And there is some step where you compute blocks. You do the singular value decomposition. Here you compute the new tensor. And you define a matrix of singular values. And in the end, you print those matrix of singular values for each iteration and look at that flow. That's essentially what happens in this code. And let me now explain to you what each of those functions actually do. So compute initial tensor is straightforward. It computes a tensor, which is just an array of all those variables. So these j's are those capital J's here, and j1, j2, plus and minus are these small ones over here. And it's a very simple expression. It's just a bunch of dimension factors and Kronecker deltas, which you should see like this directly in the code. And this is so-called this Barrett-Quine intertwiner model with a parameter alpha. In the next step, which is called this compute blocks function, you take two of those tensors, according to the diagram, you stick them together, you sum over this representation JB, and you get some intermediate four-valent tensor. There are also some products of six J symbols, which are precisely taking care of those magnetic indices. And you write it in a basis which depends sort of on this capital J bar, which is like the new recoupling basis for this tensor. And it's really straightforward to see in the code how this is really done. And this program returns to you a matrix. It groups together these two indices into one index and these two indices in another index. And it returns thus a matrix to which you apply a singular value decomposition. And the compute SVD does just that. You do it for each of those blocks, capital J1, J3. And it returns returns the singular vectors u and v and the singular values s. And now I do a bit of a dirty trick, because I compute the new tensor. I contract sort of this intermediate four-valent tensor with the map v. But I obtained this map v from a previous matrix, so I can just say this is the same as by contracting this object with v, because on this side I will have v dagger, and these two are unitary, so it will just give me the identity, and I just do it for one of the singular values, so I just take the largest one, I get the new tensor is just this matrix, or this one vector ua times the singular value. And this gives you then the new tensor, where this new effective edge depends precisely on this channel j that we have in which we have computed this before. So thus, this new edge then carries an interpretation again as the original variables. So this is essentially the entire algorithm. And what you now can try to do is you can try to run this algorithm. So just choose some alpha and let it run. You may see if you choose, for example, p equals to 12 at the very top. So this number p here at the top basically tells you how many spins in your model you have. So interesting is, for example, 12, which has then just the spins 0, 1, and 2. And if you then go up in steps of 4, you add on one spin more. And if you just, for example, just have it as... Oops. So just say you just use p equals 12, and then just let it run. You see it takes some time, and then it plops out the singular values. And I'm measuring, for example, how long it takes. So, and from those singular values, you can then read off a fixed point. So if it has, if the singular values have converged to a certain value after, let's say, a few number of iterations, you've seen that it has reached a fixed point. And so why didn't you, well, I would just like to show you what happens if you now increase this group. And you might think it's just a slight increase because you just have two more spins that you have to go through. So we'll see that this rather naively written code suddenly takes a much longer time. So this looks almost like that you have to go for a coffee break. No. Well, I hope that at some point something happens. Well, it should at least at some point print something more, but it really takes a long time. But that's something that you could try playing around with a bit to see how long it takes. And well, obviously, it is very. So just doing it this in this very naive way doesn't seem to be a good idea. So, and why is that? Oh, no, OK. This changed slightly. Maybe I shouldn't run other simulations in the background. That's OK, but maybe that was a bit overambitious. Let's just say that it is something like 16. You just wait for the kernel to restart. And then you say run all. It should be now a bit faster. Yeah. So something is happening, but you see it takes much more time, and then you realize it doesn't really make sense to just go up now and be happy with this, because actually we would like to simulate something which has twice as many variables as that. So that is pretty much hopeless. So do you have an idea what we could do to improve this? So we just look at all possible spins, but we have completely ignored the coupling rules that these spins have to satisfy in these tensors to be actually invariant tensors. So that is something that you can try to do, and that you could try to do, namely the following. So these are the coupling rules that actually at each of these steps your spins have to satisfy. So you have three spins. Two of them are like J1 and J2 are supposed to couple to large J. So these are pretty much the SU2 coupling rules as you know them from angular momentum coupling, like triangle inequalities, and that they have to be integer. Well, this one you can ignore because we're just looking at integers. And additionally, you have this condition which comes from the quantum group where P is this parameter that you have in the code. So one thing you could try, like one possible exercise that you that I can propose to you, is that you write a function determining those coupling rules, and then you try to write an index, which is supposed to count all the allowed couplings independent of one large spin J, and which would be this particular exercise here. So you go through the combinations that J1, J2, and large J can have. You check whether they satisfy the coupling rules. Then you say if they do, then you count this as an index and try to. So this would be like what we call a super index. And you basically go through the combinations that these three spins are allowed to take. And what you would have to store then is how many independents of J, how many possibilities are there? You must need an array which can associate independence of J and of K what these two spins are, because your functions depend on those. And you need a way to translate back from the three spins to the K. That would be one possibility. That would be one exercise. The other exercise is then additionally to the 6J symbol, where you see that the spins that meet at the space have to satisfy the coupling rules here, 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 and here. So you can say that, for example, that you say everything with reference to this spin. So you have an index k here, an index k here, and one summation remains, one additional spin remains, which must be able to couple to these two here, which would be the super index B. And so similarly, you would have to count all the combinations for that to be possible. And and try to write a function that gives you the range of this index and a translation back from these four indices to the spin that sits in the middle. So, and if you say, I don't really care about all of that, the solutions to these problems are hidden, well, not really hidden, but they are in the other codes. So if you say, I don't want to care too much about that, I would just like to run some simulations and see what kind of flow these models have, I have implemented these super indices in a different version of the code, namely this code that contains explicitly, with this name, which should have been sent around. So please don't copy my definition and then say that you've written it. But just to show you that this is actually much faster. So p equals 20, we have been waiting for ages for anything to happen. And now you see it is a massive speed up. So just by actually restricting ourselves to those components which can actually be non-zero, so actually computing those and summing over those which are actually non-zero, we have a massive speed up in the algorithm. And you see this is already a much more complicated object. So so in essence, I can offer you basically two different things. You can either try to compute those super indices implementing the symmetries yourself, or you can say, I would like to work with this particular code, and then I have another job for you. You see, it depends on a parameter alpha, so which is given here, which I just given here as 0.75. So for all possible values of this p, that like for example 12, 16, or 20, this thing has two different fixed points. So you could try to determine where it starts floating to something different, but there is one thing that for one particular value of this alpha, you are already on a fixed point in all of these groups, and it's the same alpha in all of them. You could try, I would like you then to find this alpha and tell me what you found. And if you found it, this is then basically the Barrett-Quain intertwiner. And if you're then enough time, we can briefly talk about the SpinNet model. So. Is that, that's what I wanted to say so far. And just, you might get started with, either trying to implement the symmetries or like compute those functions, or trying to run some code and trying to find what these fixed points are and where they are located.